Hi, welcome to Infill, where we talk housing, politics, and policy. I'm Laura Clark, YIMBY Action. Today, we have interviews from two candidates who are running for supervisor on the east side of San Francisco. So we're going to start with our very own Sonia Trauss, who is running for District 6. District 6 includes SoMa, the Tenderloin, Mission Bay, and Treasure Island. District 6 has built the lion's share of housing over the past 10 years. And then later on in the program, we're going to hear from Theo Ellington, who is running for District 10, which is the other district that's taking on a huge amount of housing. And so we're going to hear from Sonia first. So hello, Sonia. How are you?
Great. How's everybody out there in podcast land?
And also we've got Sam Moss.
Hello.
All right, Sonia. So I don't even know where to start with you. We have had such an amazing few years building this movement. It's been so incredible working with you. I don't want to get too gushy, but...
Yes, you do. You love getting gushy.
I love getting gushy. So Sonia, what's it like for running for supervisor? This is like a big thing now that you're doing.
Well, I've been doing it for a year.
Whole year.
It's true. I've been running for supervisor longer than the baby's been alive.
Wow.
So I look at him sometimes and I'm like, my supervisor race older than you, baby. I want to follow up on your comments about 6 and 10 and give everybody all the stats.
Ooh,
because yes, they're crazy. So in the last 10 years, District 6, which is SoMa, Tenderloin, Treasure Island, Mission Bay, built 60% of the city's housing.
Oh.
60%, right? And that becomes more amazing when you realize that there are 10 other districts. So 60% in one district and 20% in District 10, which means 80% housing overall. Also, if you just look at affordable housing, 50% in District 6 and 30% in District 10. So either way, whether you're just talking about affordable or housing overall in these two districts, and there are 9 other districts. In these two districts, we built 80% of the city's housing. And it's not an accident. It's not like just coincidentally that's how things wound up going. It's because of our laws. You cannot build new multifamily housing in any other part of the city. And this is, you know, bad for market rate, but it's actually especially dire for affordable housing because, as it is, nonprofit developers have to fight, they have to compete with the most expensive uses, right? Office, hotel. I mean, the city was basically like, here's a part of the city, and we're going to put everything there. Office, hotel, new multifamily market rate, and all of the affordable housing.
And with the new Central SoMa and everything, they're trying to maintain all of the PDR as they build in everything else too. It's insane.
Yeah. So, I mean, a big thing that I'm running on when I'm walking around, I'm talking to people all over District 6, is that we have to legalize affordable housing all over the city.
And, I mean, do you think that as a supervisor in District 6, do you believe you'll be able to work with the other supervisors and, you know, get them to see the same light, if you will?
It's not, well, for some of the supervisors, like the District 10 supervisor, definitely, possibly, I mean, 9 really mm-hmm. should. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, when we do these... So the top housing producer of any kind is 6, and then second top is 10, third is District 5. So we don't even, I actually don't even know where 9 is. I think it's like maybe the 5th highest producer. But District 5 did like 6 or 9% of the city's housing. So even when you get to District 9, it's still only like 4. It's not a very big housing producer.
Which is so interesting because like the...
The
relative talk to production is so interesting.
I mean, District 9 is entitling about 1,000 new affordable units right now, but like those numbers won't be counted for at least 5 years or so. I'm sure that'll do something to the percentage.
All these statistics are really interesting. I mean, the next thing that the city needs to really talk about is we've all, even the district supervisors who haven't quite said out loud, I support market rate housing, they do say out loud, I support capital A affordable housing.
Exactly. And that's what I'm relying on.
Yeah.
So it's not really me. It's not like Sonia Trauss is going to knock on Sandra Lee Feuer's door.
I mean, you might.
I mean, I will also. I'm going to say, Sandra, I want to help you build those 8-story parking garages.
In a really calm, rational way.
Yeah. I'm going to be like, let's make this real.
With an army of YIMBYs behind you.
But no, really, if it's Sandra Lee Fewer or whoever, I guess it'll still be Norman Yee in District 7 or whoever gets elected in 4. It's not really me that they're going to do anything for. It's for the it's the organized Yimbys out there. You know, it'll be because Malig and Babak are like pounding on their door and showing up at their coffee hours.
And I will say, as an affordable housing developer, it's really frustrating to look at like 2/3 of the city. It's like giant swath, and it's always green on the map, right? It's always, the maps are always like enticing and green, and like come build here, and then you realize that it's impossible and, you know, kind of illegal right now. And it, I mean, I think that, well, I hope that you can do what you're saying.
I will. As somebody on Twitter was like,
which, so you know it's true and rational.
Yes.
So this is such a funny Twitter reaction. Actually, it was to your tweet. Oh, wait, are you in this show?
No. She's pointing at our producer.
Oh, our producer did a tweet saying, you know, Sonia's the only person on the ballot who's campaigning on legalizing affordable housing. And this person was like, just because the law doesn't allow it doesn't mean it's illegal. But this is the thing. I was looking at that and I was like, ooh, this is just an introduction to the ridiculous nonsense that we are going to be hearing.
You can get a conditional use permit. Like, it is like, not legally written, and you can still do it. Just like if you design an apartment building perfectly to code, someone, you know, that's perfectly legal. Someone can just stop it because of, you know, views.
Well, that's the other way around. Just because it's legal doesn't mean you can do it.
Yeah.
It's not really what he was saying.
Is that what you tweeted back?
No, I didn't. I just closed Twitter and put my phone in my pocket, which is a skill everyone should get really good at.
So what's it like running for supervisor after having, you know, helped birth the YIMBY movement? Do you, which
I have a better question, because this is the question that I get about Sonia, and I think is completely ridiculous. So I'd like to hear how you answer it, because I have tended to just laugh in people's faces. Sonia, how are you going to make the transition from activist to candidate?
I'm not making the transition. The whole point is that this district needs an activist. We had a candidate. She had beautiful shoes. She looked good in a suit. And what happened to the district? It deteriorated. Like, more than anything, this district needs somebody that is going to have all the skills of an organizer to make all of our problems go away. Honestly, like, we have so all of the city's problems are focused in our district.
Now, I find the question completely ridiculous, because I'm like, the person who is the most able to understand where we need to be putting political pressure to advocate for change is somebody who has been railing against and about the system. Like, you have a better skill set for creating change in government than anyone else running, because that's what you've been trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, organizing is inherently about getting, you know, a bunch of different groups, you know, together to like focus on one thing and all work together.
People have a funny idea of what politics is. I mean, that's something that I have figured out over the last 4 years. So a lot of people don't really know what politics is, like how you do things.
How do you do politics?
Well, you basically have to parent trap everybody all the time. you have to have a good idea. First of all, your idea has to be super short and easy to understand. So everybody out there with like every Georgist out there who's like frustrated and doesn't know why things aren't working out for them, I'm telling you, because your idea is long and weird and doesn't make any sense. So first of all, sorry.
Your idea is perfectly good, but it is long and complicated.
And we still want you to be YIMBYs.
First of all, you have to have an idea that is resonant, like more housing's better than less housing. That's a great sample idea that I think a lot of people have gotten on board with. And then, you have to get people on board, but it includes kind of giving people the impression that more people are on board than actually are until it's true. So it's a lot like party promoting, right? Like, you might have some event and like literally no one has agreed they're going to come, but you tell a bunch of people about it and give them the impression that other people will be there, and then eventually it does
become
true.
Maybe the tickets are already sold out or something.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But maybe you only had four.
Act like you don't want it, and then they just give it to you.
Yeah.
I do think there's a lot of creating a community, right? You have to like constantly be refreshing that kind of like activist vibe and having a group of people who want to take continuous action, as opposed to people who kind of like, you know, will send one angry email and then never get involved ever again.
Yeah. Although you never know. I mean, now that I've been doing this for 4 years, which I cannot believe it's been this long, there are definitely people who like wrote an angry email, disappeared for a while, you know, I thought maybe they didn't like the idea or they didn't like me. And then I find out that they, like, have started their own little group or, like, they, I don't know, have taken on. Sometimes I lose people just to other politics. And that's okay, too. Like, I find out now they're really into basic income. And I'm like, okay, well, it's never meant to be, but it's fine. But, no, sometimes people do come back. I mean, you just never know.
Well, and now as you run for supervisor, it seems like you're collecting a lot more of those people because you have, like, a whole platform now. You've got affordable housing. Yeah. You've got safer streets. You've got, you know, you might not be calling it war on cars, but I
call it war on cars. I'm always I'm telling people the war on cars starts today.
And, I mean, being okay with an angry – if someone sends you an angry email, you know, and 6 months later or something, they come back, you still being able to work with them would seem like a kind of a no-brainer because they want to work with you in 6 months. But, I find it frustrating. A lot of politicians will, you know, draw a line. And if you do something wrong one time, you know, you kind of get ostracized for the rest of ever.
I love angry emails because, like, angry emails are, like, thought out. And they, like, are engaged with the topic. Like, I don't mind angry emails at all. Like, people being like, oh, I'm not going to vote. That makes me freaking crazy.
I was so mad. There's this crowd of clean up the streets types on Twitter who are, they are very organized on Twitter. And one of them was like, I'm not even voting. None of the candidates in six are any good. I'm not going to vote for any of them. And I really lost it on him. I was like, I'm muting all of you. I'm like, you guys aren't going to vote. I was paying attention to this because I'm running for office. I thought you were voters. But then, of course, then a bunch of them were like, I'm going to vote. I'm going to vote. I was like, thank you. But yeah, and I was really pissed. Like, why would you say that? You're not even...
You want to complain about things and then not get engaged in changing it. I mean, that I have zero tolerance for that. A long, angry email about why they'll never support anything and they're voting for the other guy. I'm like, well, you're paying attention. Like, you have fully formed ideas. So you are talking a lot about taking space back from cars and making our streets safer. As somebody who's lived in District 6 for a while and had to walk under the highway every day to and from this office, can you do that now, please? I felt like I was going to die all the time.
I think we can do it now. I mean, look, there's a lot of... there's a lot of people out there that believe that we have to do things slowly, but I don't really see why. I mean, the MTA, in other cities, they've done a lot with paint and planters, mm-hmm. you know? And I think my goal is maybe not at the end of this coming summer. Legitimately, it could take as many as 2 years. But at the end of the summer, that last week of... like that last week before Labor Day when things are really, really slow. That's the week that I think that the city, including a bunch of volunteers, I mean, we can have a huge coordinated effort with community groups, volunteers, the MTA officially. We should all at once be able to take back a bunch of road space for scooters and bikes. You know, make a bunch of roads all at once. 4-lane roads go to 2 lanes, 2 lanes go to 1 lane. And if we do the entire district all at once, then...
people will lose their minds.
I think 2 years is a very ambitious... it's why I
but
love
I
you.
But I like it. I mean, you know that there's no reason why not, right?
Right.
Like, we went to the moon. Right?
Yes. Like, not because it was easy, but because it was hard.
Like, saying we're going to reformat our streets so that they actually get more people going from point A to point B in a more efficient and less costly manner. Like, why is that so monstrous? That just seems like this insurmountable task to people in San Francisco.
And it's because the way the MTA is doing it is that they think they have to pour concrete for every single thing, which eventually, yeah, I guess we should do, but... I actually think that we should be doing everything all at once. And if you're going to pour concrete for everything, then you can't do everything all at once. And a lot of the cause of the suffering is that, like, they're redoing 2nd Street and then 5th Street and then 6th Street. It's all this piecemeal thing instead of having one plan and being like, bam, this is the new plan. Because as they change the way, you know, you can make a left turn here, but now you can't make a left turn to this other place, and people are confused and they don't know where to go. It's very stressful. But if they changed everything all at once, then it would be only stressful like for that one day, and you wouldn't have to change any more things.
I mean, I find the most compelling part about this is I went to an MTA Vision Zero. We're going to redo a whole bunch of streets near my neighborhood. And they had these big posters that were meant to like get some kind of like buy-in from like the four people who show up at this weird here. Like it's a weird community meeting with posters that like no normal person was there, right? I mean, it was just me and like five other lunatic fringe urbanists and like people who wandered in being like, what's this weird thing happening here? And they had all these stats about how many people had died or been in minor accidents at all these corners. And I was like, you have a poster establishing that people are dying. And then you have a like, and lodge your one sticker of smiley face or frowny face for this incremental change. And I was like, what?
Where is the outrage? Like,
your poster says that people are dying, and then you handed me smiley face and frowny face stickers. I was like, shouldn't you just be like making these changes immediately? Isn't that what Vision Zero was? Like, what was the point of us doing this Vision Zero policy if you want me to put a frowny face next to the thing that says that someone will die less? What is this?
It's community input.
Yeah, community input, pretty straightforward. Does everybody want to see this email that I got from Mark?
Well, oh, yes.
It's hard so to this see an email on a podcast.
So Sonia has been strongly advocating for a lot of people to come on board with yes on Proposition C. And big news today was that Mark Benioff is coming in strong, donating $1 million to the campaign and probably going to spend another $1 million out of pocket of his own money in outside spending. This is like thrilling to get a lot more money for homeless services and housing. So yes, Sonia, let's hear the email from Mark.
So a long time ago, when Prop C first came out, I emailed Mark Benioff and I said, have you heard about the gross receipts tax to pay for homeless services? This would be so great. And then I didn't hear anything for all of this time. And then I saw in the news that he did come out yes on it. Woo-hoo. So obviously I was so happy and excited. So I emailed him like, thank you, congratulations, this is so wonderful. And he emailed me back, like, I guess I want to call it a meme, but that's not really what it is.
There's an image of him.
There's an image of him half smiling. like dashing half smile, I guess. At the end of the day, it's going to be, are you for the homeless or not for the homeless? For me, it's binary. I'm for the homeless. Mark Benioff, Salesforce CEO on Prop C. It's an image that the Chronicle made. So I guess he's now...
I think the Mark Benioff machine made that bad boy.
But, okay, well, I don't know. It's in the Chronicle.
Might be the Chronicle. They do memes.
Right. So he sent it back, so I can use this meme now, I guess.
Yeah.
Looks good. Hot off the press.
Well, that's great, though. I mean, it's important to know that, I mean, the overwhelming majority, if not all of the YIMBYs and Sonia Fuhrer campaign were, you know, yes on Prop C almost from the immediate beginning of when
I found out about it. I was like, no downside to me.
Annual guaranteed revenue for homeless services and fully supportive housing, like hard stop.
It creates another revenue stream for the housing trust fund.
Yes.
And right now, I mean, the housing trust fund, the only way the money gets into it right now is through impact fees. And when there's no development, there's going to be no housing trust fund.
And now that we have raised all of our fees and construction costs have gone up, we're really going to see. I mean, this is the part that we need to elect a really strong pro-housing majority at the Board of Supervisors, because what people might not know is that our pipeline is drying up. There are hundreds of projects that were entitled that now the numbers no longer make sense. They got through the permitting process. They made obligations that they now cannot fund. And so nothing's penciling. Everything's grinding to a halt. And we're going to need a Board of Supervisors that's going to prioritize changing our current structure to make sure that we get the housing that we need. And it's going to take doing things like lowering fees and lowering inclusionary and figuring out a whole bunch of how we're going to get more people working in construction jobs. That's the hardest one. But I don't see a lot of people with, you know, the backbone to actually take on these problems that aren't named Sonia Trauss.
Yeah, except me. And luckily, here I am right in this room.
That was a sweet hair flip right before she said
that. Yeah,
I'm
doing a hair flip for those of you at home who are only listening and not watching.
I mean, it really is true that, like, everybody else is just like, oh, yeah, that's definitely, like, a disaster that's coming, but that's not really my problem.
Yeah, you know what I just thought of? I mean, you always talk about politicians wanting to get to the head of parades. And that is the big difference between having, like, an activist versus... What was the other thing? I can't even remember the other word.
Candidate is what candidate. They often say. I was I don't really know what that means.
Yeah, honestly, that... Yeah, at first, like, I was like,
candidate is an activist for themselves.
For themselves!
Like, what are you talking about? Like, do you not know how politics works at all?
No.
Like,
no,
you have the most experience establishing a voting bloc. Like, there's no other... Right. skill that translates so exactly packly wackly to your current job.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I'm, you know, we'll see how it goes. But anyway, I was going to say is that that's on the board of supervisors right now. If you do have a lot of candidates or politicians, then those are people that are kind of waiting around to see what parades are forming, you mm-hmm. know? And I think it would be good for the district and the city to have somebody on the board that actually like gets parades going.
The other word for that is demonstrating leadership.
Oh, yeah, leadership. Yes. That's what leadership's about.
I think that's literally what that's about. So, Sonia, we are thrilled to be supporting you for supervisor.
Thank you.
So, everyone, we're going to include the donate button in the links on the podcast, as well as get out there and volunteer. If you live in the district, Sonia, what are your calls to action?
Yeah, more than donate money, donate time. Poor Annika, my fundraiser, is going to be like, I hate what I'm hearing right now. But Ben, my volunteer coordinator, will love it. Because
we're under 30 days. Like, it's time to get out there.
It's time to GOTV. And T stands for the, and V stands for vote. So you, the truth is, the candidate that has the most volunteers at this point is the candidate that's going to win. So I need the most volunteers. And I know a lot of YIMBYs are involved in other campaigns too. That's cool. Just cut other parts of your life. Stop going to the gym. Don't go grocery shopping. Don't see your friends because you can't cut any other campaigns.
Eating is overrated.
It is overrated. When
we'll feed you pizza. Sometimes.
I don't
believe in
pizza.
We have chewy bars.
Yeah, that's right. We have chewy bars and water. So...
Salt.
But really, we got to get out people out. So the big days are October 27th. That's a Saturday. That's the first Saturday that people can vote at City Hall. And then actually the 28th, and then the 3rd and the 4th. And every single day, though, like literally every day after work, just come to the YIMBY office because we'll mainly be working here, but also other campaigns. I'm serious, you guys. Like, you don't want to wake up on November 7th and be like, I could have done more. And you know what else? Whatever other thing, like your music lessons or swimming class, you can do that after the election. But there's no other like 30 days in your life when you can work on trying to get any of these YIMBY candidates elected.
And so, I'm going to create even more urgency because, in fact, right now it's 29 days.
And when this comes out, it'll probably be like 25 days.
Yeah. Oof. So everyone panic?
Yes, you should feel panic.
Yeah. We will also be sending out this week an email called Voter Circle. This is a tool that you can use to email your friends the YIMBY endorsements. So keep an eye out for that. If you're not already on the YIMBY Action list, become a member at yimbyaction.org/join. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we're going to hear from Theo Ellington in District 10. District 10, by the way, includes Dogpatch, Bayview, and Potrero Hill. Welcome, Theo.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Theo, we've known each other for a couple of years now.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. Are you one of those Bayview natives?
Absolutely. Bayview native, man. 94124. And some say it's, you know, some call us unicorns. Others call us an anomaly. But proud to be born and raised here in San Francisco.
So tell us a bit about yourself and your candidacy. You know, what are the issues that are really important to you? And, you know, as a longtime Bayview resident, the district's changed a lot.
Yeah, we're jumping right into it.
We're jumping right into it.
Oh, I like it. I like it. So thanks for having me, first off. Always a pleasure to speak about, you know, District 10 and politics and my candidacy. But like I mentioned, born and raised in the heart of Bayview and really, you know, developed this deep concern for my community at a very young age. I always recount sort of my time walking to middle school. And it was unfortunate that my walk to middle school was plotted with sort of balloon shrines of friends and family and classmates who fell victim to gun violence. But I knew very on that the conditions that folks were living in on the southeast side of San Francisco were a lot different from the issues felt elsewhere. So I knew at a young age that I would be called to public service. But this is sort of how it has manifested itself now, I think, into this role as supervisor. And really, you know, jumping out into this race because I feel like we need to make the district affordable. We need to continue to make San Francisco and Bayview in particular and Petrel Hill and Visitation Valley and Dogpatch more affordable for all families. And I think you do that through public policy. You do that through development. And when you find that right balance, I think that's when you hit the sweet spot where we have the opportunity to do so in the next 10 years.
And District 10 has built a lot of housing and has sort of the pipeline for the coming housing. A lot of the city's overall housing need, although even the current pipeline is nowhere near the current need. And I think one of the things that I'm really excited about all of our candidates, but especially you speaking from the Bayview perspective, is that you've been pretty straightforward about how every district needs to be pulling more of its weight, that every district needs to be contributing to housing in order to make things in the Bayview a little bit better. If you want to talk some about that.
Absolutely. You know, although our district is prime for development, we have to make sure that the development sort of equity, if you will, is the new sort of buzzword. We want to make sure that is divided across all districts. If you look at one of the things that I talk about since the beginning of this campaign is calling on every supervisor to take an inventory of opportunities in their district, whether it is surface parking lots, whether it is a clustering of sort of gas stations, underutilized public spaces, fast food joints, you name it. I think that the city is primed to figure out unique strategies to build more housing all across San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, it is crazy how many parking lots we have. I mean, I lived in New York for a little while, and New York has a lot of parking lots and whatnot. But I will say, like, San Francisco has an ungodly number of parking lots.
I knew that parking lots would spark an emotion in you, so that's why I mean, it makes me feel, you know, parts of San Francisco, like we're in San Jose. I took a trip to San Jose recently, man. And I realized there are so many surface parking lots in San Jose. I mean, not New York, but a stone's throw away. When we talk about housing and needing to adapt regional strategies, surface parking lots are sort of no-brainers to me.
So talk with us for all our listeners, kind of what are the core issues of your campaign right now? What have you been hearing from people in the district, and what is your sort of big message that you're bringing to people?
I think the number one issue right now has to be the Hunters Point Shipyard. A lot of folks who live in Bayview, who live in Potrero, who live in Viz Valley, and quite frankly, all across San Francisco, our attention is focused on the shipyard for a couple different reasons. One, it's the most, it's just crazy to me. The more and more I think about it, the more and more I get away from my talking points, because it is just insane to me to think that radioactive material was found 50 yards away from housing. And we've attended meeting after meeting after meeting and still have yet to receive the answers that we need and that we deserve as a neighborhood and as homeowners and as residents and as folks who work there on the site. So that's the number one issue. We can talk about that, but there are a lot of other things that are top of mind for me.
But let's stay there for
a second. Let's stay there. Okay.
Because your particular angle on that story is so incredible. You know, you are one of those families who benefited from one of those BMR units. You and your wife are getting the benefit of housing going in, and also the extreme cost of like such a crazy amount of negligence going into that new development. I don't know. I mean, talk as much as you want about that, because I agree it's top of mind for everybody.
Yeah, well, negligence, I think, is the perfect word to describe what's happening. There's a group of people in the neighborhood who are not surprised. Like, there's a group of folks in the neighborhood who have been talking about this for years and for decades, and just in simple terms are not surprised about the outcomes. There's another group of residents, particularly the folks who have just moved there within the past 5 years, who feel a bit uneasy because, again, there are no answers that are put forth. But I want to take you back to sort of what happened fairly recently. December of 2017, the Environmental Protection Agency wrote a letter to the Navy stating that Tetra Tech falsified 97% of the soil samples that were at the Hunters Point Shipyard. Immediately, the site should have been shut down, and there should have been some answers and information provided to residents and the community. That did not happen. Two supervisors who worked for Tetra Tech are now in jail, are now in jail because whistleblowers came forth to say these were the unfair practices that they were doing and how they falsified the records. Fast forward to a couple weeks ago, we filed a lawsuit claiming negligence, and we pushed for the Department of Public Health to retest the soil. I'm jumping a bit all over the place, but follow me here. Prior to that, California Department of Public Health, our local Department of Public Health, the Navy, the Department of Toxic and Substance Control, all gave this Parcel A clean bill of health. And they relied upon whatever science they relied upon, but told residents that nothing needed to happen on Parcel A. But until we filed that lawsuit and pressured the California Department of Public Health to retest Parcel A, they've decided to only surface test. I know it's a lot of issues that we can get into, but they only decided to surface test. And when they did, they found radium in a small sort of cap-like material 50 yards away from my house. And it's insane because they swore up and down that there was no issue with Parcel A. So now what we're asking for is a complete investigation of what happened, but also retesting of the actual soil in Parcel A by a third-party investigator. It's just mind-boggling to me. I still can't wrap my mind around it.
No, I mean, for me, you know, pulling back for me to sort of the broader housing picture, the thing that is so striking to me as somebody who's in the housing space all the time is that, you know, from a bigger perspective, it was easier politically to talk about rehabbing former industrial space. It was easier politically to try and take this former nuclear waste site than it was to go say, hey, West Side, you should upzone and build apartments there. And we need to be building housing everywhere, and these cleanup sites need to happen. But it was literally easier to have this argument about, you know, putting people near an industrial waste site than it was to upzone the West Side. Sure. And I don't know. We're going to see these kinds of things. You know, obviously brown sites can be done properly.
Absolutely. And I think that's the other part that I don't want folks to miss is that we want this project to be complete. We need the housing units as a city. We need the community benefits as a neighborhood, but you can't put profits over health outcomes.
And that this process we have of all of this community engagement is not getting us safer outcomes in housing. I mean, that's the other part that, like, we have a whole infrastructure around our permitting process that at the end of the day isn't actually getting us the safe results that we need.
I think you're going to start to see a lot of environmental questions come to bear with San Francisco's waterfront. I mean, our waterfront is not the safest area to build by any stretch of the imagination. So the 8 waterfront development projects we have on the southeast side of San Francisco, there has to be serious environmental, I don't want to say testing, but an environmental eye on some of these projects, given what we used to do on our waterfront, given sea level rise, given all of the things that we didn't necessarily take into account 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago for that matter, when we started to talk about these new development projects.
I mean, to totally nerd out for our listeners who enjoy that, you know, this is where it becomes so obvious that we have this environmental law, CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, that is not helping us get environmentally just outcomes in any way, but is getting abused to prevent housing from going in next to, you know, other existing apartments. I don't know if you have a CEQA opinion yet.
I think the one thing I will say about CEQA and going through just the process is I think you're right. I think we've got to find a mechanism to ensure that our health outcomes are put first and not anything else, right? I think if you look at, again, classic case with the shipyard or any of the other sort of waterfront projects, what happened on our waterfront, whether it was nuclear testing or you're bringing in shipping containers from all across the world, whatever, there needs to be serious consideration for previous uses And if that's CEQA, if that's another local measure, whatever it is, we've got to seriously consider that.
One thing I really appreciate about you as a candidate, it just feels like you have skin in the game in this way that I think is really important for especially the Bayview. I think, you know, your candidacy, I think a lot about that phrase, if you're not at the table, you're on the table.
Yes.
And I think, you know, you really embody that. You know, you live at the Shipyard area. You understand the need for the community to have a lot more housing opportunity.
Yep.
And you've been watching the change take place in your neighborhood. And I just have a lot of respect for how you're navigating what are really deep, challenging issues.
I appreciate that. And you're right. I mean, I'm fully invested in this neighborhood. I own my home there. This is where I want to raise my family. This is where my grandfather moved to really sort of lay his claim in San Francisco. And he came during a time where you could actually afford to live here and buy a home. And so I think those opportunities should be afforded to anybody who wants to do that. We've got a real special opportunity in District 10 to change the landscape of how sort of cities are operating or how neighborhoods operate. I mean, we've got the space to build. We have the space to welcome a new job center. We've got the space to modernize our PDR. We have the space to welcome and create new community centers. We've got the space to really figure out a way to have regional connectivity to be a city of the 21st century. And that is what this election is about. It's really about figuring out how we create leadership in a city and in a neighborhood that so desperately needs love and care at its most basic level.
So one of the other issues that we, you know, we talked a bit about housing, but with housing comes transportation and the Bayview and District 10 overall, you know, you mentioned sometimes feels a bit forgotten. Auntie April will certainly complain about the T line.
Yes.
And moving around the district and getting from the district to other parts of the city has been
correct.
A real challenge. And I'm wondering if you can talk some about, you know, your hope for transportation in the district, especially as so much housing comes online.
Sure. I think, first off, I think it is safe to say that the T-train sucks. And that we have the greatest opportunity for a transit system to work because we have the infrastructure there. So the T-line, the infrastructure for the T-line to be successful is there. We just need the necessary investments there to make it work. And if you look at north-south, right, we have the T-line, and then for the regional connectivity, we've got the Caltrain line. So though we've got this really great sort of grounding for a great transit system to work. The challenge is our east-west connections. If you are trying to get from one suburban area in the district to another, that's difficult and that's challenging. So I think that's where we start. We start get moving people east-west, and we do that by connecting District 10 to the rest of San Francisco. And to Muni's credit, they've started to bring in new transit lines and replacing other transit lines, and they've done a really good job, or better job, let's say, at their community outreach. What I don't want to see happen is what historically happens in our district is MTA comes through and they rehash plans that were already thought out 10 years ago when we didn't necessarily know that this growth was happening. So I'd like to see, just broadly speaking, our transit goals and our planning goals sort of more aligned. We didn't see that 5 years ago or 10 years ago for that matter. I think we'll start to see a more concerted effort from the city to begin to align those goals. But we've got the infrastructure to make it work. We need the necessary investments dollars wise, but we also need, I challenge everyone in the district to continue to take the T. I think when we see a packed T train, we'll begin to see a more robust investments made in our transit system.
You know, the District 10 also has a need for a lot more protected bike lanes. I mean, this is true all across San Francisco. You know, getting people using different kinds of transportation.
Absolutely.
I certainly did not feel super safe riding a bike in District 10. You know, whereas I would come out from I once tried to make the what felt like a fool's errand from the Mission over Dogpatch and then deeper were into District 10 on a bike, mm-hmm. and we got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm kind of on a highway.
Yes. Highway 3rd Street.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm wondering, you know, bike infrastructure is something that a supervisor does, you know, can have a lot of control over. And I'm wondering what your perspective on, you know, getting people out of their cars and obviously on transit, but also on lots of other kinds of transportation.
Absolutely. I'm all for it. I think, you know, transit in general, you know, the goal or the undertone in these discussions should be, how do you connect neighborhoods together and not separate them apart? And a part of that is the bike community and figuring out how District 10 isn't the last to get all of the sort of amenities related to, you know, bike share and other mobility programs that are out. But in terms of bike, protected bike lanes in particular, I think we need a re-envisioning of both 3rd Street and Illinois. So Illinois runs parallel to 3rd Street on the east side. And historically, Illinois Street was used for, there was a rail line, and it's continued to be used today for the trains to go back into the rail yard. But I think we got a serious opportunity over the next couple of years to figure out sort of long-term visioning around those two streets and how it pertains to providing the most transit options available. I think the other opportunity we have is with water service. We have all of these waterfront projects happening, I think 8 on the waterfront from AT&T Park down, that we can begin to have a robust conversation around water taxis and ferry services. So I'd be interested in leading those conversations as well as we begin to develop on the southeast side of San Francisco.
So you might not know this about me, but I used to work in New York as a photographer on a tour boat.
Wow.
That would go out to the Statue nice. Of Liberty and back.
Yeah.
So all of the water taxis and ferries, and yeah. it is the best way to commute. You feel, it's I mean, awesome. It's amazing. You just feel like a new person every day. Yeah.
So when I was working for the Warriors, I was heavily involved in securing the 16th Street ferry station for sort of RM3 and all of the other transit measures. And I was amazed that you can get from 16th Street here in San Francisco to Oakland, Jack London, in 15 minutes. Yeah. It was amazing. Sorry, I just got excited about that because it's amazing. And I think that we the Bay Area is behind compared to New York, Seattle, or even other parts of the world in terms of water service and utilizing our waterfront to move people. I always say water service should be, to spark that discussion, we should talk about emergency management and use water service as sort of an excuse, or vice versa, to talk about how we get robust service to this side of town. Anywho, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Dogpatch also is bringing a lot of housing online. And, it, you know, it suffers from a lot of the, like, issues that we've been talking about not being fully connected with enough bus lines and whatnot to get it feeling like it's connected to the rest of the city.
Sure.
I'm wondering, you know, what kind of sort of all of the different neighborhoods that, I mean, the District 10 is a big district.
Yes, yes. Big district with very unique issues in each neighborhood. And you mentioned Dogpatch. The population in Dogpatch will triple in the next 3 years.
Wow.
And that's pretty fascinating to me, but also serves as an opportunity, right? We know that when folks move to different areas and growth happens in a neighborhood, folks want that connectivity. And I think we've got an opportunity, particularly with the engaged network of people in Dogpatch, to begin to have that conversation now. What you are starting to see, as you mentioned, more housing being built in Dogpatch because they're changing the use of certain spaces, right? Dogpatch historically was heavy in industry, and the infrastructure, and what I mean by that is literally the streets, and our transit for that matter, was not necessarily designed for that many people. So we're going to start to have to challenge the city to walk and chew gum at the same time. We've got a plan for now and plan for the future. And I think Dogpatch is a perfect case study as to what will happen in the southernmost neighborhoods as the growth begins to move in that direction.
So talking about your campaign, one thing, so we want to get people out there,
yes.
canvassing, phone banking, please. Hitting the streets. And I do want to say, like, what's the most appealing thing about volunteering on the Theo Ellington campaign? I'm going to answer for you.
Okay.
It is the weekly phone banks at Auntie April's Chicken Waffles and Soul Food Restaurant.
Absolutely.
Because yes. I cannot imagine a better place to phone bank.
I mean, folks come out every single Wednesday. It's normally a room full. with chicken from Auntie April. I mean, it's a home cooked meal, and really, this is just about building community. I mean, you get to make phone calls with the candidate, you get to walk with the candidate, you get to walk with your neighbors, you get to have an opportunity that doesn't really happen in other campaigns that I've seen, at least in District 10. This is grassroots at its best, and you really get a sense of what this neighborhood is about and the diversity of this neighborhood through knocking on doors. I mean, you see families that have been here for years, and then you see new folks who have moved in, but both have the commitment and the desire for this neighborhood to be whole. So it's something special happening out in D10, and you get to see that firsthand when you phone bank on Wednesdays or when you come to knock on doors on Sundays. It is a prime opportunity to get to know the district firsthand.
Awesome. So any other like closing words, what do you think is kind of the most important thing you want people to know about you? End on a high note.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't expect that question. we are in a good campaign wise. We are in a really, really good position. We're going to win. I mean, I've normally at this time you have a sense of where you are on the campaign. And we feel really good about our positioning. We picked up a lot of support from folks who live in the neighborhood. And I think that's what I'm most proud of is when I walk down the street and you have people yelling out the window, keep it up, you're doing a good job. Are you driving or you're going to the grocery store and you see someone you know who recognizes you. Those are the small things that let you know you're doing a good job. And this campaign is really about standing up for the neighborhood that we deserve. Far too often, all of District 10 has been forgotten about. We have been the dumping ground historically for all of San Francisco's waste. We have severe inequalities in our district, but I'm hopeful because there are so many stories of strength in our neighborhood and our community that I highlight on the campaign trail, whether it's the new businesses moving into the 3rd Street corridor or the parents on the Hill who are organizing to preserve their public space or the folks down in Viz Valley who are mending cultural differences between the Asian American community and the African American community, or even deeper in Sunnydale, where the Samoan and Pacific Islander communities are beginning to organize and really stand up for the neighborhood that they deserve. So this campaign is about continuing that stuff and really calling on everybody to come together and fight for what we think is right. So I appreciate the time, and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Theo.